Hello, welcome to our podcast. Now, it's Advent, the fine season of Advent, and Christmas is fast approaching. Our minds now are turned to the lands of Christ's birth, the Holy Land. And appropriately, I'm joined by Dr. Harry Hagopian, our Middle East consultant. Now, I'd like to start by asking you, Harry, to give us your reflection for Advent in context with the Holy Land.
Well, I think, James, that Advent is a time of prayer and expectation. It's a time of reflection. It's a time when we think whether we are opening our hearts wide enough to receive Christ into it. And when you do that, inevitably in this season, you think about the place of the birth of Christ. So you think of Bethlehem, you think of the Holy Land, you think of the whole biblical story, and then you start wondering about the people in that land who are celebrating Christmas and at the moment Advent, leading up to Christmas, just like us, and how they are faring.
But that's a really interesting one, because do we actually think about Bethlehem? We see the cards, we see the nativity scene. But I don't know if we specifically think about the Holy Land, do we?
Well, if we don't think about the Holy Land, it's because our faith is not challenged enough and because we've so much over-commercialized Christmas and the festive season that Christmas for us has become more a season where we go out partying, where we buy gifts, where we spend money, where we take time off work. But the real essence of Christmas, which for me is the birth of Christ, the Word made flesh, that sometimes escapes our notice. And it's sad that it does, because at the end of the day, Christmas is the birth of Christ. And if we do not keep that focus well in our minds and in our hearts, then everything else basically loses its significance to me.
To be a bit controversial, could we not argue that perhaps the significance might have been lost a little bit in Jerusalem itself?
Well, the significance has been lost in Jerusalem. In Jerusalem, there are human beings, men, women, and children, with their own concerns, with their own expectations, with their own hopes and disappointments. So in a sense, they're not that much different from what we are here in London or anywhere else in the world. So it's a human nature to think about things ephemeral and not about things that are much more longer lasting and much more concrete. However, having said that, I think there is a difference, because in the West, I think we've over-commercialized the festive season, be it Christmas or Easter. In the Middle East, perhaps a little bit we have, but less so. And the reason it is less so is because you are living in the land where the whole biblical story unfolded. Wherever you go, you come face to face with the Church of the Nativity in Bethlehem, with the Church of the Resurrection in Jerusalem, with all the biblical stories inside. So even if you were to try and completely put it out of your mind, you can't, because the physical realities, to some extent, are still there. And those physical realities imbue the people with a sense of transcendental faith that we in the West sometimes manage to let go.
How, though, can they, talking about physical realities, put to one side the checkpoints, the borders, and that sort of physical reality as well?
Well, if we go back, James, to Jesus's time, life wasn't easy either. Persecution was rife. Discrimination was there. Violence was quite endemic. And here was Jesus, God made man, who came to bring justice and salvation to humankind. Now, he had problems. The people had problems there. We have problems today. Now, part of the reason, I think, why we as Christians should look toward Jerusalem, toward Bethlehem and the Holy Land during Advent season, during Christmas, during Easter, is not only because we are recalling the stories of the Bible, but because our faith is one of solidarity, is one of outreach, is one of universalism. In other words, if I'm a Christian in my own four walls in my flat, and that's where it stops, then the whole significance of my faith and my Christianity disappeared to me, because Christianity is something to be shared. It's a message to be shared with others. That's what the whole evangelism is all about. And therefore, what we need to do is to spread out that message. When we go to church, we can pray in our own houses. Why do we go to church? Because we want to pray with others. The same thing happens when we celebrate Christmas and Easter. It's a question of reaching out to other Christians in other parts of the world who do not necessarily share our culture, who might not have the same color of skin that we have, yet the faith is the same. What is that faith? God made man who came for the salvation of humankind and then was resurrected at Easter time. If we keep this reality quite concrete in our minds, everything else that comes with it are only trimmings. Now, the trimmings are delicious, but the real message is also very important.
So let's look at the real message, but let's put this in context with what is called the Holy Land Coordination, an international meeting of bishops organised by the Catholic Bishops' Conference of England and Wales, an annual pilgrimage of bishops, if you like, to the Holy Land. Tell us a little bit about it and a bit about this year's theme. It's January, isn't it, 2011?
It is in January 2011. This is something, as you might well know, James, that's been going on since 1998, when the Holy See mandated our own bishops' conference here in England and Wales to coordinate a meeting every year in January of bishops from all across the world. We're not talking only about the UK or Europe. We're talking about the whole world, United States, Australia, Canada, other parts of the world, where they come to the Holy Land. And basically, the idea is for them to show solidarity with the Arab Christians, with the Christians of the Holy Land, those that Peter calls in the Bible the living stones, to stand in solidarity with them and to share their pastoral life at a time of great importance, which basically is the Christmas season. So that was how it started in 1998. It's been going on for almost 12 years now, and the whole idea is to show solidarity, to walk the walk with the Christians of the Holy Land, but hopefully when we're walking the walk, we also do it seriously, and we do not just mistake the walk with the talk. In other words, that we do not only say, oh yes, the Christians of the Holy Land, we should think of them, and then we do that for a fleeting second, and once the meeting is over, we forget all about them. Now, that's not our responsibility, that's not the mandate we've been given, and that is not what our faith exacts of us. So I think that it's very important that this meeting gets together all those bishops, first of all, to understand the reality. You just talked to me about checkpoints, occupation, discrimination, rise in religious radicalism. All these are issues that these bishops come from all over the world to get to know what the reality is year in, year out, and then take those realities back to their own countries in order to pray for the Christians of the Middle East, in fact, for all the peoples of the Middle East, Jews, Christians, or Muslims, but also to solidarity doesn't just mean looking and appreciating or evaluating realities, but it also means taking action. And taking action means peace and justice, which is eventually what we all pray for in the Holy Land.
Well, let's look at this year's theme, which is working for a lasting peace.
Uh-huh.
I want you to forgive my cynicism, but that is something surely we can still be banging on about in a millennia unless something concrete happens.
Well, that's what I say when I write my articles or when I give talks or when I'm talking to people in conferences, that we keep talking about peace, peace, but peace is so elusive. And the reason peace is elusive is not really. I mean, I've worked on the Holy Land and the Middle East for a couple of decades now. So I know the realities quite well. I know the dynamics of what makes or doesn't make the region move.
So you've probably seen this theme time and time again.
I've seen this theme time and time again. I've seen it religiously. I've seen it politically. I've seen it sociologically. I've seen it economically. I mean,
so is it useful to do all this again?
It is, because for two reasons. One, because what do we mean by peace? That's the first thing. And for me, for peace to happen in the Holy Land, in fact, in all parts of the world, you have to have a transformation in your own heart. You have to show the good faith and the goodwill to be able to make peace. But if you go there without any good faith, without any goodwill, and you're only looking after number one, peace will remain as elusive as ever. I've always said that in conflict resolution, one of the things they taught me at law school was that you don't go for win-lose situations, you go for win-win situations. And in the Holy Land, we have two peoples, Palestinians and Israelis. And if we're going to find peace between them, then it has to be a win-win situation where the Israelis and the Palestinians actually get something out of it. What do they get out of it? They get out of it security, peace and justice for all. Now, you tell me, why do we keep doing it if nothing concrete is happening? Because every time we think we're coming close to that goalpost, something happens and the cookie crumbles. Yes, it does. But I've also learned, sometimes with difficulty, that my faith demands of me not to lose hope. Because hope is that beacon that distinguishes us as Christians. Hope, compassion, and love. I mean, those are the three tenets of our faith, aren't they? And if we lose hope, then we might as well pack it in and go and really forget all the story of Christmas and just go and have a wild party. But if we're going to do something serious, we have to keep that hope egging us on to labor for peace, because that peace is essential.
Now, I agree, and I wouldn't advocate for one second we just drop it, obviously. The question I would have is, if you're a bishop from, I don't know, Canada, Australia, wherever it might be, and you're moved by what you see, it actually has a proper effect on you, and you want to go back to your conference, to your country, and spread what you've seen and really encourage people to get stuck in. I myself haven't been to the Holy Land, so on a personal level, that's something I need to look at, and you know, we all need to take it on to a degree. But how then can that bishop or those bishops go back to where they're from and spread that word and actually convince ordinary Catholics, if you like, that it's important to get out to the Holy Land and see what we're talking about?
Well, I mean, what you've raised are so many different questions at so many different levels, James. One, when a bishop comes from Canada, from the United States, from Germany, from the UK, goes there and sees the reality on the ground, then that bishop goes back and conveys that reality to his flock, to his congregation, to his people, and then asks them to think about the Christians, their brothers and sisters in the Middle East, in the Holy Land. That's at one level. That's at the spiritual level. But then again, that bishop, that congregation, those people could also be a little bit more proactive. They could, for instance, be proactive politically. They could actually lobby their members of parliament. They could go and speak out, write about the situation there. We are living in a global world these days where the internet, we've seen this through the WikiLeaks, the world is one small village, a global village in a real sense. What happens in a village in the West Bank in Palestine is not lost on people in Canada, in other parts of the world. So we are conscious of what's happening across the world, and therefore our word, our written word or spoken word, counts. We have to have the courage to do it. That courage is also part of our faith. But if we play politics and we do not say the truth as it is because we're trying to be diplomatic, we're not serving ourselves, we're not serving the others, nor are we serving the mandate we've been given, us particularly as the Bishops' Conference.
But I like what you've done there, really, because not everybody can afford to go and see the Living Stones. It's not cheap, clearly. But you've given some practical and money-free ways in which we can show our support and solidarity, writing to MPs, being genuinely interested in spreading the word. What more can be done, though, do you think, from a church perspective?
Well, from the church has enormous moral weight. That's a reality. For instance, I'll give you an example, James. When we had recently the synod of all the Catholic churches of the Middle East, which also had observers from the Orthodox, Reform, and other churches, and in fact other faiths present there during this long two-week synod. I think it was even longer than 2 weeks. One of the things that came out from all the propositions that were submitted to the Holy Father for him to look at, one was that we should encourage what I call living pilgrimage. In other words, people who can afford it, instead of going to Marbella or going somewhere else, to go to the Holy Land. It might not be the same kind of fun, carefree holiday, but there are beautiful beaches, there are beautiful mountains, there's beautiful countryside, the people are hospitable, the food is brilliant, and the people are nice, they're accommodating. This whole idea that you're going into a powder keg of violence and radicalism is utter nonsense. We have radicalism everywhere in small minorities. I mean, we've just had a story now with this guy from Luton who went to bomb people out in Sweden. I mean, it's everywhere, but the majority of the people are peace-loving, peacekeeping people. Go there, have your fun, but at the same time, go for one Sunday to church, speak with the people there, try to establish twinning schemes between churches in the Middle East and the Holy Land with those in Europe and North America. Try to convey their cares, their concerns, their worries, their disappointments to the outside world. It's not all about money. Money speaks. I mean, I know money speaks and I don't deny it. However, there are other things that we can do other than money. And if you can't go, if you can't afford to go, and there are many people who can't do that, particularly during those recession hit years, I mean, you can do virtual pilgrimages on your internet. Now, almost everybody has an internet. You can see the realities. You can become more involved. You can write about these issues, argue about these issues, and if necessary, even when it comes to one Sunday a year, have, for instance, in this country, in England and Wales, we can have a Holy Land Sunday, where we can basically bring to our faithful across the whole country in their churches the concerns of people who share the same faith, who believe in the same Christ, and who recite the same creed.
Well, what better time of the year to have it than this particular season?
Precisely. And I'm just hopeful that this year in January, next month, that this year's coordination meeting will spice up a little bit the meetings. In what sense spice it up? The International Affairs Department is a small department that's overwhelmed with lots of concerns here at the Bishops' Conference. However, it's imperative that it manages to show the reality as it is, broaden the scope of meetings, because it's important to meet with Israeli Jews as it is important to meet with Palestinian Arabs, be they Christian and Muslim, because those three people together constitute the mosaic of the Holy Land. And you cannot basically just target one population and leave the others apart. It wouldn't work. To talk to them, to understand the realities a bit more, and then take it up on a political level, on a religious church-based level, on a sociological level, and just say it as it is, because by saying it as it is, we're doing everybody a favor, because we are talking the truth. And as far as I know, the truth is what we also believe in.
Well, I don't like to let you go, Harry, without some Arabic, if we could. And I think you actually want to talk about a song, don't you, today?
Yes, I mean, this has become a little bit our tradition, James. We always end a podcast with a few words in Arabic. Next time we should do it in Hebrew or some other language. But for today, let me do it in Arabic.
That would be stretching me. I'd have to rely on you, Harry.
Well, there's an element of trust, James. Let me just conclude in Arabic by wishing all Christians across the whole Middle East, because the Middle East is a large region, but particularly the Christians of the Holy Land who are in our thoughts during the Advent season, wish them a fulfilling and Merry Christmas. And I am delighted that you're going to phase us out with this podcast with Silent Night being sung in Arabic by one of my all-time favorite Arabic-Lebanese singers, Majda Rumi. So let me just say, عيد ميلاد مبارك للمسيحيين جميعا في الأراضي المقدسة. سنة خير, سنة سلام, وسنة هناء لكم جميعا. آمين.
Amen. And some might want to phase us out, Harry, but I'm going to fade us out now after we've heard this wonderful track.